Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello everyone, Mach here. Just want to remind everyone that we have got a Patreon. Head to patreon.com/MachXPageX. We did our very first Patreon exclusive hangout in the week. We had such a good laugh, just shooting the breeze, chilling out and having a laugh via the wonderful medium of Zoom with some of our amazing patrons. It is available to every single tier member. So it doesn't matter whether you join a tier 1, tier 2 or tier 3. The monthly Q&A hangout is available to you, as well as exclusive content and access to our Discord group as well. So if you want to support the podcast and you want to get involved with the next monthly Q&A, you can do. Go to patreon.com/MachXPageX. On with the show. Hello everyone, it's the Mach and Pageax podcast. We're here, yes we are, and we're glad that you are too. Thanks so much for joining us, and if you haven't subscribed to the YouTube channel and you're watching this on YouTube channel, make sure you subscribe right now. We've passed 20k, which is great. Let's keep flying up through it all. Chris, how are you?
Hi, I'm good, mate. Yourself?
I'm okay. I think I'm suffering. I don't know. It's not like seasonal affective disorder, but I think having had like a week and a half of like intense, incredible sunshine to like roll out of bed today, and it's pissing down with rain, and it's just really overcast and really this and that. I don't know. It's just like a psychological mood killer. How about you?
Yeah, I think since Sunday, it's been overcast, not like metaphorically speaking, because of what's going on in America and stuff like that. Now I'm in health and everything else, and the family are good and stuff like that, but there is this like fucking hate to use the phrase, but a black cloud hanging over us, and this is part of the problem, isn't it, I suppose. But I think, you know, I'm glad that people are talking about it. I'm glad that it's in the media, and I'm glad that we're going to discuss it on this show, because it needs doing. This fire needs fuel.
Yeah.
And it needs people to keep on talking about it until this shit is fucking stopped.
Yeah.
And stamped out. And I was thinking about this before, Paul, and I have never done a podcast with you, and I've not verbalised this to Paul, anyone watching this. I've never done a podcast with you where I've been nervous before.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been nervous all day about this podcast for a few reasons, really. One, I can't understand and feel how black people are feeling right now. And
yeah.
I will never pretend that I can. But that won't stop me using what little voice I have to speak on the subject.
Yeah.
And two, because we won't be able to do it justice. And we won't be able to provide justice or solace for anybody, because we wear this white coat of privilege that we don't even know that we're fucking wearing. And we can't know that we're wearing it, because we've never walked in anybody else's shoes, or we've never understood a different point of view. But what I will do is promise you that I'll tell you the truth, I'll tell you what I believe, I know Paul will tell you what he believes, and I vow that I will bring my kids up differently. And that's what I'm going to start with today, and that's why I've been nervous.
Yeah, I think it's insane, isn't it, that we're in a world where, I mean, we talked about it. It when you think about it, the last few weeks, obviously, we've been doing these podcasts in lockdown, and we actually talked about like protests, and you know, it's only a few weeks ago since we were sat here, a bit tongue-in-cheek, almost laughing at like the anti-lockdown protests, and you had these fellas storming into government buildings with automatic weapons, and there was that guy with like the rocket launcher on his shoulder, like it's some crap version of GTA, and now weeks later, people are having legitimate protests with legitimate reasonings behind it, and these people are being castigated and they're being slaughtered in some corners of the media. They're being, they're basically having the dog sicked upon them by the president. There's never been a more stark example, and these examples exist all the time. If you care to look for them, it's the blinding obvious, and that's almost been one of the overriding points of this. Is again in how different people of different racial backgrounds are treated, but it's mad in one country that you can have two different examples. You can get people are being killed for looking or having an aura apparently of being menacing, or people perceived to be threatening, when you've literally got people walking into positions and you will never know. But the argument that I've seen so many times is like, if that was a person with a different skin colour who walked into those situations in those places with those weapons, let's see what you can't imagine the reaction would have been the same.
We don't need to imagine. We've seen it time and time again when white people have gone into schools and slaughtered numerous people, children, kids, fucking teachers, everything. And he was getting bullied and nothing really happens to them. Fucking George Floyd may or may not have paid for some cigarettes with a fucking fake $20 bill, and he's dead. And there are, just have to look on Twitter, there are numerous examples of this across all races, but the one thing in America that wins out is if you're white and you do get treated differently, And it has to stop, and I'm so glad and proud that people are standing up, and I'm so glad and proud that the majority of people are doing it the right way, and they are peaceful protests, and it looks like, you know, that country's going to turn a corner, finally, and I hope that it fucking does, and I hope that it makes every other country look at their own country and think, because all it's done is made me think about the video I did last year, for the Young Turks, about how young black sports people are treated in the English media and the UK media, and we're not far behind America.
No,
and we don't get to look down at the end of our nose at America in this, because we're just as fucking bad.
Well, we're not.
We just
pulling...
don't happen to have fucking guns on the streets.
Yeah, we're not pulling in an opposite direction to America, no. Chris. We follow behind them, whether we like that, whether we like it or not. Culturally, in the way we handle things, we the country takes its lead from America. We're often just a little bit further behind. It's all a year, you know. I think that gap is actually shrinking, so we're catching up to them far more quickly instead of going in an opposite direction. So you're right, it's because I'm saying people like, well, why are people protesting in the UK when it's an American problem? It's like, well, it's not an American problem. It's a global problem. It happens in countries like England all the time, and they are flames that have been fanned significantly in recent years because of the rise of alt-right, because of the rise of the right in general, because of things like Brexit and all those things, where, you know, it was blaming people who are not non-whites effectively for all of the problems, or people not from here, you know, that kind of blaming people for that does lead to it normalizes that behavior. And that's been the worst part of it. I remember going up through the 90s and in the early noughties and thinking we were on the right track. You know, I genuinely thought like right-wing politics and agendas were on the way out because they were very, you know, archaic. And there's just been a massive rise in them again. And that leads to a lot of, you know, very, very old mentalities that should be dead and buried. And they're not. Can I just say, because the thing that's winding me up about this... I think there's lots of positive stories, and inevitably people will choose to focus on the negatives because negative stories just, you know, drive more retweets and clicks and interest and shock horror and all that kind of stuff, sensationalism. But the reactions to people, like, it's a great example of something where it creeps into your life and it creeps into your timeline, and we talk about this a lot. the people whose immediate reaction to seeing like a hashtag of Black Lives Matter and their reaction is All Lives Matter, and it's like, yeah, yeah, we know that, and everyone knows that point, but that's not the point that's being made here. That's a wider point, and it's a perfectly valid point. But to use it, it's like correcting a great point because of the grammar's not right. And you know, some people are using it to kind of deflect, and some people are using it to like cut the legs off the movement or whatever. But I genuinely think there's a lot of people out there who are just, I don't know, like they're taking offence as though by saying Black Lives Matter, somehow saying your life doesn't matter, your life matters less, and it's not the point. It's not the point of the whole thing. It's a clear, it's a concise message, and it's a message that in this particular instance came out of one big touch paper moment.
Black Lives Matter has been going on for 5 years.
Well, absolutely, but in this particular instance, this is where, you know, it's risen because of this one particular instance. People just need to embrace it or walk away from it, whatever you choose to do, but trying to undermine it by like trying to make it into something else by nitpicking it, I'm finding more frustrating than anything else.
It is, because it takes away from the point, and it's kind of like, we talk about politics so much on this show, but I think right now, and maybe it's always been this way, but I'm an adult and I have a better grasp of stuff nowadays than I did 20 years ago. Simple messaging is the only way that you can get through to people en masse.
Uh-huh.
And Black Lives Matter says something to everybody very quickly in 3 words. And it's highlighting the issues. It's not highlighting, and All Lives Matter, it doesn't highlight the issues that black people are going through.
Yeah.
Black Lives Matter does. And it's that fucking simple.
Well, exactly, because yes, all lives matter, and it should be a given. Black Lives Matter should be a given too, by the way. But what it does is it's like saying, yeah, that's right, but we need to get there. We need to earn the right to get to the point where all lives matter, because right now there is an imbalance in a lot of societies, and that imbalance is towards white people and white middle class and above people beyond that. And there's obviously too much nuance for it to be debated online, or for it to be debated via the medium of protest. Right now, there is a massive imbalance, and it makes sense to bring up the levels that are lowest, rather than worrying about, you know, if you want to get everyone to the same level, there might be work to be done on this side of the spectrum, on, you know, for people who, you know, white people there or is. Whatever. Yeah,
there is.
But it's
but
not.
But we're talking about. Sorry, Paul. Finish your point.
But the gap to the finish line is so much further away from people from other backgrounds and in other situations. So rather than focus on the people who are generally speaking, broadly speaking, across the board, and again with the risk of generalisation, are in a far healthier position. It doesn't make sense to worry about that now. We're so far away on the other side of the balance that it makes sense to focus on that, as far as I'm concerned.
It does, and listen, All Lives Matter, let's say we take that. Are they fighting for racial injustices? Are they fighting for police brutality? Are they fighting for justice reforms? Are they fighting for economic injustices? Are they fighting for quality healthcare and quality schooling? No, but Black Lives Matter is, because they feel every single one of those pinch points.
Mm-hmm. The issue that this is a grey area, though, Chris, I think, and this is where the debate gets. I think a lot, you know, the most sensible people are on the right side of this, and of course, like you know, there's no world in which a police officer should be able to murder someone by doing what happened to George Floyd. That shouldn't be allowed, and you shouldn't be able to get away from that scot-free. And that's not an indictment across the entire police force across the entire globe. But, you know, and that example and other similar examples need to be better judged after the fact, or greater sanctioned and all that kind of stuff. But the what you're finding is now you've got peaceful protests, mm-hmm. and then you've got looting and you've got rioting, and at its fundamental level, I've got no problem. I have to phrase this carefully. Peaceful protests are the right way to approach things. So you go there because it's like showing no violence is non. You're not looking to provoke people, so that you can be on the good side. You can take a peaceful approach to it, and you stand there and you put your hands up and say, "I'm just making my voice heard. That's all I'm doing. I'm you know, exercising my right to freedom of speech, or whatever equivalent that is in the country you're going for." But as we've just said, that doesn't necessarily translate to a global message, because do the media carry that story as well? We see loads of protests. In fact, we don't see loads of protests. There's been tons of protests in this country over a variety of subjects that I believe in, but they don't get coverage, because until there's a blow up point, it's just a bunch of hippies making some hippie BS points. And particularly when you've got a country that's dominated by the right, who look at these people as unwashed, you know, the unwashed masses and their silly soft liberal views. There needs to be an almost an explosion point of this, because it shows that it matters, you know, that people, and now it goes too far, and the concern is that when you get senseless looting, when you find that there's, like, you know, fairly well-off middle-class white people who've got no real stakes in this, going and robbing trainees out of shops, it's just, you're just doing it because you're taking advantage, and there'll always be that. But I think there needs to be kickoffs. People need to see it, because in some instances, it's the only language people understand. The problem
with that, mate, is that we're talking about America, right?
Yeah.
And America is made up of 70% white people.
Okay.
Black society in America accounts for about 8% of America. Now, Donald Trump is a tit. He is the biggest tit in the entire planet, and he's the most powerful tit in the entire planet, unfortunately. And he has now got a reason to be able to point the crosshairs at black society, yeah, because they're the one looting. That's, yeah, his message, whether, yeah, it's right or wrong, yeah, to his power base,
yeah,
to the people who will keep him in power this year. And 8% of the country, and add up all the minorities in America, it adds up to 30. So all he needs is 40% of the fucking white vote,
yeah,
or 50%, sorry, 50% of the white vote.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, you know what I mean? Yeah, it's, yeah, so fucking fixed anyway. He probably needs about 10% of the, yeah, votes, whatever it is.
Yeah.
But the fact is, he's now got a crosshair on everybody else. So in this instance, I don't think it does work.
Yeah.
And I don't think that is quite right. I agree with you. But it also gives Trump something that he can lean into.
Yeah.
He can use this to his advantage, and that's not good.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, though, and the point is this, you're right, you know, in that regard, but you're never going to change Trump's mind on something.
Of course not.
Because I was having a think about Donald Trump this week, and how, like, Donald Trump, for us, we look at Donald Trump and we roll our eyes at best, and we are aghast at worst, you know, at some of the things that comes out of his mouth, and some of his actions, and the way, and the things he said, and his policies and his attitudes and all that, I find absolutely abhorrent. I think he's a dreadful human being. But Donald Trump, in Donald Trump's mind, is winning. Donald Trump is right. Everything Donald Trump does is right, and he must be right, because he's president of the United States of America. He has, whatever the game is, he's won the game. Whatever this game of life is, he's played it, and he's accrued mass wealth. He's got buildings all over the country with his name on it. He's got millions and millions and millions of people who hang off his every word. He can basically walk up to women and grab them by the genitalia and get away with it scot-free. And for being all of these things and everything that he's been along the way, in a popularity contest, effectively, people chose to put him in the biggest hot seat on the face of planet Earth. So, like, he's like, I just trying to get into his mindset of how someone can be that, like, far gone and far weird. But is this thing, I realised this when, you know, we had with Brexit and with the Conservatives getting in over here, you realise that no one plays by the same rules as, we don't play by their rules, because we've too many models to play the game. But if the game's the game, are we the ones who are wrong for not playing it?
The game's rigged, mate.
Yeah, yeah.
We've come into Monopoly, and the old Kent Road is fucking the only Monopoly. The Browns are the only Monopoly left, and they've got Mayfair and the fucking Greens and the, yeah, Yellows and the Reds, and we're expected to make our way through, and, yeah, we can't. It's impossible.
Yeah.
You can't fight to the top.
Well, it's not even that. They've got the whole
even
board.
Even if you do well,
yeah,
you fucking got Houston, which, yeah, is blue. Well, no, which is not even halfway down the board.
But
you know
this is
I mean?
The point, isn't it, Chris? And to take this back, they own the whole board. None of us, we don't own the board. We're lucky if we own the piece that we move around the board in, let alone the you know, we're lucky if we own the car. Cars on finance, you know what I mean? We definitely can't imagine having a boat. Jesus Christ.
We're paying rent wherever we fucking go.
No, exactly. That's it. Every step we take costs us money to do it. And that's why I actually think the Luton thing, I think it can go too far, because I think there's a difference between smashing up mom and pop's corner store, which is more people like you. You know, if you're fucking up your local neighborhood and you're fucking up small business, then you're not, I don't think you're furthering your cause. But I'm not asked if you want to smash an Apple store up, because they're insured up to the eyeballs, and you know what I mean, and they can cover themselves in that again, regard. But the looting side of thing, what you realize is this is the most downtrodden in society. They're going into built-up city centers, and a lot of these people who are running out with stuff, they're running out with stuff that they would never be able to buy or achieve in their entire lives. And that's what the rigged game looks like. Is that if you're left with a situation where you actually you feel justified in walking into a shop and coming out with armfuls of stuff, then there's deeper problems, and the deeper problems run like this, and it's nothing we'll ever be able to solve, because we could talk about this for days, and if this was something that was solvable in just days of chat, someone would have solved it by now. But it's the levels of inequality to all this, which is so blatantly obvious. And what happens is the police are at the forefront of this, and then it becomes like, well, the police are there to defend you. Yeah, they are. And it's why in some regards I blame horrible police officers, I blame racist police officers, I blame people who aren't fit to uphold the law, people who don't have the right morals to uphold the law shouldn't be in those positions in the first place. But all the police are they're trying to tackle it's like trying to treat cancer with aspirin. With paracetamol. That's all the police are. There's a fundamental flaw to how society is constructed, and the police are just a knock-on effect of all of that stuff. So you can reform the police, and it needs to be done, and it should be done, but all they ever are people who treat symptoms. You know, they don't, you know, if there's an increase of violence between particular areas of cities or particular racial groups or whatever, that's a systemic, historic situation that those people exist in. They exist in mass poverty. They struggle to access jobs. They, you know, the prices of the daily price of living, the cost of living is prohibitive for them to be anything other than the things they are in life. And that's, in America in particular, and we're getting this way when we've got Tories, because they believe this way as well, is that they've been taught to believe that if you're poor, it's because you're lazy or you're not talented enough to be rich. Whereas, you know, we are, and people always criticize when we talk about socialism on this podcast, and I'm not saying there's tons of examples of it working, but the fundamental theory of it is that everyone is created equal and everyone is entitled to the same basic fundamentals of life. If you can add a sprinkling of capitalism on top, fine, because that promotes growth, that promotes creativity, it promotes innovation. But when unchecked capitalism is allowed to run riot, it means that the rich get richer and the poor get poorer.
It does, mate, and look, I think the only thing I would say is that the cancer's in the fucking police. The cancer's in the entire society. That's the problem. It's not, police reform doesn't work without societal reform first. Mm-hmm. And particularly in white society.
Yeah.
And that's the problem. Yeah. Nothing else.
Will you take guns
the other minorities are not the problem here.
Yeah.
The problem is white people with white privilege and their upbringings. That's the issue here. And those white people being in positions of power, a la the police, a la the fire service, a la everything else, the military, whatever it is, and there are good eggs and there are bad eggs, and there always will be across the world in whatever you're doing, whether you're working in the Asda, the Walmart, or you're working in Trump Tower, it doesn't matter, there's good eggs and bad eggs. The problem is that the needs of reform in the police, like you say, because that wasn't, that what Derek Chauvin, I think that's how you pronounce it, did, was not only murder George Floyd, he put him down like a fucking animal.
Yeah.
Like, have you watched the video, Paul? Have you been able to put yourself
I started watching it and had to turn it off. I couldn't get through it now.
I felt it important for me to watch it, so I was deeply upset watching it, and I would suggest that you probably don't if you don't feel comfortable with it. And I watched a full 9 minute long video on it, and it wasn't the full 9 minutes of Chauvin putting his knee on him. Derek Chauvin came along in the third police car. when he was already fucking restrained. I don't know if you know this, Paul. Now, he was restrained from the minute he left his car. He was sat on the floor. This is all on CCTV footage from the shop. He never said anything. He never did, never provoked them in any way, shape or form. He just said he didn't want to get into the police car when they eventually walked him over after about 3 minutes to where he died. And then he slipped down the curb, and then they threw him through, and two more police cars came, and in the third police car, Derek Chauvin arrived, who has previously had been involved in three police shootings and one fatality on his fucking resume already. And then he pulled him out the car and shoved his knee on him, and we'd all know it was about 9 minutes long, and it was fucking horrendous, and there was bystanders there saying he's fucking dead, you need to think, you need to, he's not breathing, and you could see it, he was fucking dead, Paul.
Yeah.
And it was the most horrendous thing I've ever watched, but for me, I needed to see that. I needed to see it because I needed to understand what had happened. And it's the worst thing I've ever seen in my entire life, and I cannot believe that it fucking happened. And I understand and feel the pain of the, and the outpour of pain from fucking everywhere around the world right now, because what happened to that man, as I said at the top, was he got fucking put down, and he was he did nothing wrong. He did fucking nothing wrong.
Yeah.
And where's the police camera footage? Why are we getting the mobile phone footage and the CCTV? Because the police, they all have them there in America, don't
they? The body cams.
The body cam, they all wear body cams, and that's not gone. One person being charged isn't good enough. Four people being sacked isn't good enough. It's the American justice system. Until they're all brought to justice, nothing's going to be good enough, and it never will be.
Yeah.
But like everything, there's good come out of bad. And what you've seen in America is his brother, George Floyd's brother, standing up with a fucking megaphone, asking people to be peaceful and calm, and telling them that he's a God-fearing family, and that you need to protest peacefully. It's not what George would want in Minneapolis, and seeing that, and that's incredible. And I watched about an 8.5 minute video on Sunday morning with another guy doing exactly the same. Good will come out of this bad, and it has to come out of this bad, but everyone needs to educate themselves, and don't think that you can't do anything. Do what you fucking can.
Yeah.
Go on to Black Lives Matter, the website, donate if you can, and make sure that you understand and you educate yourself and you keep talking about it, and don't fucking worry about losing a few fucking followers on Twitter or fucking your YouTube channel or whatever it is you've got. This is more important than fucking anything else. As I say, I vow today that my children will never be brought up like that, and they will know the difference between right and wrong, and they will never, ever, ever even think about colour in a negative way. That's my vow to you guys, and it's fucking horrendous. And can we move on before I start crying, mate?
Yeah, it's it is. It's an absolute shit show. And as I said, it's one of those situations, and the thing that you want it to stay on the front of the news cycle, you do, and it should do, and hopefully this means positive reform. Yeah, I mean, again, I've talked about this before. I fear that we're already living in the darkest timeline. We're living in the dystopian future that we all kind of thought was going to be a science fiction thing, but it's happening. We're living it at the moment. And hopefully good does come of it. And hopefully what it means is with America, that when the situation comes, when it comes to, you know, for re-election time, hopefully people think twice about what that means. And if it just, hopefully it tips the balance enough to make sure Donald Trump doesn't get back in. But this is the thing, and this is the problem with all of this, just to kind of wrap it up, is that it's we look for easy solutions to problems. Like sharing a black screen on your Instagram account is a good start. If you've done nothing, you know, getting involved getting involved with the conversation is a good start. But I think too many people seem to think that these things are the shortcuts, and there's quick and easy answers to all these stuff. And it's not. It's going to take loads of work. It's going to take loads of time. It's going to take a commitment from not just one or two. It's going to take a commitment from people en masse. And then it's going to take people to force the local governments, and it's going to take them to push that up to national governments, and then, you know, making policy reality in order for things to change, because that's the only way it can happen, and it's going to be a long process. But if this is the first step towards it, then, you know, hopefully people will look back on George Floyd in years to come, and in the way that people look back on you know, on people, you know, of the past, whether it's Emily in Pankhurst, or, you know, go back to Rosa Parks and those kind of people who are held up, and I'm sure would not have chosen necessarily to be held up, but have ended up being held up. And if they can represent something more, then it might elicit some positive change. Just a knock on the effect of this, Chris, is we were talking about, we talked a bit about the Liverpool team taking a knee on the Red Men podcast this week, which I just thought was a great gesture. Inevitably, you know, and we had this conversation, but I'm interested in your take on this, actually. Because it's football, and because it's Liverpool Football Club, and because years ago Liverpool defended Luis Suarez, there's a bunch of people online who seem to think that you're not allowed to change your stance and not allowed to be involved. I know, yeah, mad, isn't it?
It's ridiculous. I saw a tweet the other day saying, oh, well, blah, 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 Liverpool did this for Luis Suarez, and someone, I think it was another club, mentioned, and the next time, why don't you fucking try and do it? Was the fucking next time? This was the fucking next time. And the fact is, what is Liverpool Football Club? It's an institution, yes. Mm-hmm. But what makes Liverpool Liverpool? The fucking players and the staff then and there.
Yeah.
And that changes like you fucking, like a fucking snake sheds its skin.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That will change over time. You know, Liverpool in 1970 had never had a black man fucking play football for Liverpool, yeah, before. Yeah. We're now in the stage in 2020 where I don't know how many black people play there, but probably maybe half the team,
yeah,
is black,
yeah,
or of colour. You know, so it changes. Your football, yeah, you're not the same, and you're not the same person, and you make mistakes in your life, and you can rectify them. You can make sure you don't make them again. You can apologise for them. You can stand up and for what you believe in. What Liverpool did there is brilliant, and anybody fucking who's got a problem with that has got a problem. Because they're racist.
Yeah.
Because they don't think it's right.
Yeah.
Because even if you make a mistake, and we made a mistake at the time of the Luis Suarez, yeah, stuff, Paul.
Yeah.
A massive mistake that I've regret ever since.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've spoken about it before and stuff, and it opened my eyes and it changed me, because now I don't blindly follow a fucking football club because I'm wearing red tinted glasses.
Yeah.
And that's when I knew that I had to change, and yeah, I did. And
we were saying,
and that's what and these people need to fucking recognise that.
Yeah, well, that's, they were right,
having a part.
Well, we said, didn't we? Yeah, it was funny. Sam Walker brought it up on the Red Men podcast. He was like, you're blinded by your football club, you're blinded by your allegiances, you're blinded by the star playerness of it, but also, you know, and it's not seeking to defend it, but you've got to remember the context at the time was. This is not John Terry being caught on camera with the Anton Ferdinand incident, where he's literally caught. You can see him saying the words. There was no, like, it was Evra's word against Suarez's word, and Suarez said no or never. So we jumped to the defensive argument without looking into it further, without seeking it. And then what it became was, it became like, you know, in you know, it became Suarez is either the villain or Evra's the villain. Well, they're not. They were just two human. They were just two human beings, and one did something fucking stupid. And I think ultimately, you know, maybe from the outside in, people would never have doubted Suarez's guilt or whatever in it. But, you know, we were blinded by a number of factors at the time. But you're right. It doesn't change. It doesn't mean you can't grow as a person. I say this all along. I often get asked my opinions on things, and I have my opinions. But I'm not certain there's too many opinions I have that are totally intractable, that I hold so dearly that I would, like, that, you know, like, that I would just dig my heels in on forever and ever and ever, because I'm not that way inclined. I'm just not that kind of person. I remember being invited on, it was after the Suarez thing, and then when Liverpool did that thing with it leaked, there was a number of leaked words, like a leaked document of words you can't say on the cop, effectively. And I got asked to do a documentary about this for Channel 4, and I don't think it ever aired in the end. I certainly never seen it. But I was sat down in a room for this documentary, and it was with a representative from the LGBT Liverpool community, and there was a couple of people who represent different fan groups with regards to different, you know, ethnicities or whatever. And I kind of gone in about these words, and I had my opinion of them top line. My top line immediate way, when you say you can't say things like man up, for example, oh, well, come on, just it's just an expression, isn't it? And then and it got going. It was things like obviously we've had some of those things that goes back to the Chelsea rent boy stuff and all that kind of stuff. And there's things like taking the piss out of someone for being like a lady boy and all that kind of stuff. And they all seem top line to be a bit like whatever. It's just a bit of banter or whatever. So I kind of went in with the opinion of this is a bit much. It's a bit like political correctness gone mad. But by the time I'd had this round table discussion with people with whom not a lot of these words impacted those people in a way, I was like, well, fucking hell, yeah. I don't care enough about these words. They don't bother me. But because it doesn't bother me doesn't mean it shouldn't bother someone. And you know, there's a path that leads to a real gentrification of life. You know, when you take out a bit, because if someone's offended by swear words, are we going to stop swearing? Maybe not. But I will say I still judge when and where I use that language. But I walked out to that documentary and I think they might have even been a bit like, well, we kind of needed this someone to be this. They think it's a bad idea to get rid of these words. But by the end of it, I changed my opinion completely. I was like, oh no, God, I'm with you guys. Because you have to look outside your bubble and you have to see all this stuff.
I know you and I'm the same. We're malleable. You know, we can fucking read a book and it can completely change our mind on something because we're not the cleverest people in the world. We've never pretended to be the cleverest people in the world. There are cleverer people than us. And if they fucking say it, then I'm going to believe them until I read something by someone else who's even more clever or more clued up or more experienced. It doesn't matter what it is. My experience of life has been, for the most part, living in Liverpool in the same suburb, give or take a fucking postcode or two.
Yeah.
You know, it's not that fulfilling a life that I've lived. People have lived much greater, richer lives with more experiences, and I'll take their word for it in a lot of cases. Yeah. So I might go in and think this is fucking it. And the other thing is, a lot of things I don't really care about. So like Man Up was a great example there, because I nearly said it about 15 minutes ago and I didn't, because I thought about what I was saying just quickly enough to be able to change it, because I know that it doesn't offend me. If someone said it to me, I wouldn't be offended. That's fine, but I won't use that. I will try not to use that terminology now because I don't want to offend anybody. And that's not being fucking my hands tied behind my back. That's me trying to be a better person than I was 5 years ago. And there is nothing fucking wrong with that. Confession, I stole a pen from you when I was in the office, from your table.
That's not mine, it's Tom's. It's a gel pen, mate. Can't write with
that. Is that right-handed only?
Gel pen, mate. Can't write with it as a left-handed person. You just end up with gel ink all down your hand.
It's a Bic.
Is it?
It was on your table. It was five Bics.
Not mine. Fine. Look, again, it comes down to it, and this isn't to say that if you want to offend someone, there's time and place when you want to offend someone. It goes back, I think, to the Chris Rock thing, but like, if you're going to be in an argument with someone and you want to hurt them and you want to offend people and all that, you choose your moments. If you want to pick on an individual, pick on your individual, do what you got to do, pick your moments, pick your battles, because there is times when you need to have a sharp tongue and stuff. But there's no need to have casual conversations to make. For me, this is where we differ a bit, like, just in terms of like approach to thing. I know you like making people uncomfortable in various situations, like, but it puts me on edge. Like, I don't like doing things that I think will make people feel uncomfortable, because it makes me feel uncomfortable to think that someone would be made to be uncomfortable, kind of thing. That's why I don't like cringy comedy. I hate movies where someone goes undercover and they've got a choice between selling out the people that they've made friends with or going back to their establishments and all that. You'd be amazed how many films that's in. I don't genuinely enjoy that. So I'm fine. I don't mind. There's things that I don't need in my life. And a good example of this was how we used to use the word gay. And we're only going back 10 years, but like Chris Moyle used to say it on the radio. It was like a you'd say that's gay, and we never thought twice about it. Like, it's mad how that's nothing ago for me. 10 years is no time at all. But how much
you've not really changed?
No. You stay. I think you mentally grow to a point where you're normally about 17, 18, up to about 21 normally, and you're largely because you're an adult then, and you're largely that with some tweaks along the way. So 10 years doesn't seem that long, because the gap between 21 and 31 is not unreally, because you haven't gone through any major formative changes. But yeah, even in that time, and I'm like, and I think about it sometimes. In fact, Community is a good example of this, because Piers Hawthorne in that uses gay as an insult all the time in that, and he gets away with it in inverted commas because he's supposed to be this old crank who's kind of stuck in his ways, stuck in the past, and you can kind of laugh it because you're laughing at him, which is how you kind of get away with that kind of thing. But it was in the day to day lexicon of how we talk to each other and how lads talk to each other and all that kind of stuff. But we've moved on from that, and I don't miss it. You know what I mean? It's just a word. There's other words, there's loads of words, loads of different words, and loads of ways you can get across your point. Just call someone a nonce instead. You know what I mean? Like, you know, if you want to get an insult, if you want to insult someone, there's loads of insults. You know what I mean? You can just pick an insult, go wild. But the idea for picking on somebody because of their ethnicity or their gender is just,
or sexual persuasion.
Well, yeah, exactly. Like, I mean, unless you're a nonce, in which case you deserve picking on. But you know, it's crazy.
I mean, and while we're saying that that's not allowed, I don't think you should pick on people for wearing glasses or going bald either.
Yeah, we'll get there, Chris.
Just saying.
We'll get there.
Just saying. No, it's for a mate.
We'll get there. Absolutely. Well, no,
Ross. No, and it's totally fair game if it's Ross.
Maybe no, but we all face it in our own little ways, don't we? You know, like the Scouse thing. I often think about this: is that Scouse voices don't get the same airtime as accents from other places. You don't hear Scousers on adverts, and you don't hear Scousers in TV shows. And if you do, it's someone putting on a Scouse accent, and it always sounds horrendous. It's like nails down a chalkboard when I hear someone try to do a Scouse accent, because then you can. It's a very difficult one to get right. That's our very, very limited scope of understanding on that. One thing I want to mention to you, actually, because I saw Ped from Toffee TV actually drew my attention to this. And it's, I don't know whether this flies in the face of what we've just said on the Liverpool Suarez thing, but I don't think it does. I think this is an interesting grey area on this. The San Francisco 49ers standing up for the Black Lives Matter campaign, where they're the people who effectively sacked Colin Kaepernick.
Yeah.
Thoughts?
I don't like it,
yeah.
But you can change. But this wasn't the difference here is that was institutionalized racism from the NFL as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how much you know about it, but he's been trying to play football ever since,
yeah.
I think it was 2016,
yeah.
And no team has given him a job. And he's been a very good option for a lot of teams during that time, because quarterback play has been pretty atrocious.
Yeah.
And they've basically washed their hands of him and his cause, because the owners didn't want the focus to be on what he stood for.
Yeah.
They wanted the focus to be on football. And that is it's like not saying anything. So before, when you were talking about the black photograph on Instagram,
mm-hmm.
The Black Lives Matter campaign there, I still believe that it's better to do that than nothing.
Yeah.
But that is, as you were rightly saying, that is step one.
Yeah.
That can't be the end of the line for you, mm-hmm. by putting one photograph on Twitter or Instagram or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But that, to me, is 10 times better than not doing anything. And the NFL did nothing around the Colin Kaepernick stuff for a long time.
Yeah.
And he still wants to play. He's still fit. He still can do a job for an NFL team. I must admit, I don't really know too much about what the San Francisco 49ers have done recently.
Mm-hmm.
But I noticed the Washington Redskins stood up and said about it. And I wasn't feeling that just because of the fucking name. And the Cowboys, and like, but this is the thing, isn't it? I mean, the American sports teams have names that are linked to the past and stuff like that. And one of the problems with America as a country is that, you know, when you think about it, that land was stolen by white people.
Yeah,
and it was us. Yeah. It was Brits as well as Spanish and everything else. You know, and the black community built fucking America for the white community.
Yeah.
But we digress slightly again.
Yeah. But the Colin Kaepernick stuff and the San Francisco stuff's mad, because it's like yeah, you're right. It's become such a big issue that you just be like, I'd have thought in an instance like this, particularly given like the taking the knee thing, like I'm not look, it's not like he invented it, but him doing that has actually become a symbol for what it is as well. And obviously there's so many parallels drawn between the George Floyd stuff and obviously Colin Kaepernick's come back to the front of the news cycle again because of the kneeling thing. I find it mad that someone just wouldn't go. This is not like Adam Johnson trying to find a footy club, like, or and I know Ched Evans, I think he ended up being cleared, but I get it. Like, if you're having to make a defence for someone who's broken the law, fine. He just didn't want to stand for the national anthem. Like, it's Barmy country.
Absolutely,
I love America. Like, America's my favorite place on it. Like, I've not been to enough of it, but I genuinely love America. I love Americans, but some of the decisions and some like that, the how vehemently they stand behind that flag, man. It's like
the rules. Like, you can't hit the floor.
Yeah,
and all that type of stuff. Like, it's madness.
It's bit, yeah. People get wound up about some mad stuff.
I like that as well, though. I do, because they fucking care and they're proud.
Mm.
And that's interesting to me, because I don't have that for our country.
No.
So I didn't say, I said it was interesting because I don't understand that point of view.
Yeah.
And that's really why I find it interesting and intriguing, because I wonder how I'd feel if I don't feel part of this fucking country for a start. So that's probably, although I have to deal with all the shit just like you and like everybody else, we all have to deal with the shit that our leaders do. So it's refreshing, and we're coming off a great Prime Minister's Questions today as well, Paul. I don't know if you've seen any of that today yet.
No.
Fantastic viewing, mate. Starmer is absolutely killing him. And Boris Johnson doesn't know what fucking day of the week it is at the moment. Like, this is going to be great lockdown viewing.
Yeah.
But back onto the American stuff just quickly, like, what the fuck was the photo opportunities about for Trump, by the way, walking across that park across Washington to go and stand with a Bible in his hand that looked like it was physically burning his hand in front of the church?
Did you ever see the clip where he gets asked about being religious? Yeah.
And he doesn't know any
And
verses,
he's like, can you quote your favourite Bible verse? And he goes, oh, yeah, it's all good stuff. And I wouldn't want to...
So blindingly obvious that he doesn't know anything about
that's
it.
That's like whenever we and just a funny example of this, whenever we do like a final word show and you've not watched the match and you come to someone who's not watched the match and you go, what about, that tackle from Trent Alexander-Arnold in like the 35th minute, how good was that, mate? And they go...
I just
thought the all-round performance from Liverpool was really good, and it was good to get the win and do that. It's like, you've not watched the match. I can spot it a mile off. We've had so many people do that down the years. He's never read the fucking Bible. I'm amazed if he didn't burst into flames, right? If he got near anything even pseudo-religious.
But at the same time, they were firing tear gas at fucking innocent protesters to move them out the way so he could take his photo opportunity. Like, he's put the military against his own citizens, and that he's gone to war on his own country.
What is he doing? We've definitely said this before, but I think people look at history, right? And so they look at World War II, and they look at Nazism, and they look at Adolf Hitler, and I think people were so trained to look for that. It's like they've got they're standing on the watchtower. And the message has gotten diluted. It's like people have gone, this is what you're looking out for. And every generation we go, this is what you're looking out for. You're looking out for these kind of behaviours. But people have forgotten to identify the wider things. And I think people are literally just sat on the watchtower now looking at a picture of Adolf Hitler and going, has he got a moustache? Is he white? Is he small and German? Or Austrian, sorry. Has he got a comb over? Nope, fine. Well, it's not Adolf Hitler. It's not the second coming of Christ. You know what I mean? It's not like, which is, let's not get into that, by the way. But like, it's like people are expecting when this kind of national socialism and fascism returns to the mainstream, people are expecting it to come in an Adolf Hitler shaped package, and they're expecting it to be exactly the same, because of course sequels are all just retreads of the things that have gone before. Let's not get back into the Star Wars argument from last week, but and instead they're not recognizing that there's so many similar movements that America is slipping towards fascism again. And
he is a fascist.
Yeah, and fascist. Because I think people expect, yeah, it's got to be Germany again, because like, whoa, listen, World War One and World War Two, they were kicking off, weren't they? Like, it's got to be this. Like, there's probably, you know, again, this is why you've got the rise of extremism, and it's happening in different corners of the world, but there's a distinct correlation between where lots of extremism's coming from and how many of those countries have been bombed by America or allies or allied forces along the way, and therefore their hatred for particular cultures. Like, they might just be the baddies all along, but if you keep telling everyone, if you control the narrative and you're telling everyone you're the goodies, the whole history is written by the victors, yeah. Would you recognise it if it was coming?
You wouldn't, Paul. No. And honestly, mate, I just can't talk about him anymore, mate. He may be the worst human being ever.
It's mental, mate. It's just mad. I said this thing, innit, about America the other week. Well, yeah, I mean, when we talked about this, these lockdown protests, and we said, I fundamentally love the attitude of Americans, and it's why I don't believe everyone should have guns. I just think they're just fucking shit. They're dead cool. Guns are cool, but they're not. They're just fucking death machines that you shouldn't be able to have unless you're super trained with super legitimacy behind you and all that kind of stuff. And even then, I'm a natural pacifist anyway. I don't really see the point in them, but. I like the pure notion behind that America have got, and the reason why the right to bear arms is so that they can rise up and overthrow the government if the government ever decides to. Well, no, well, yeah, but this is the point. It's happening. It's like, lads, it's happened. All this stuff you've been getting ready in your bunkers for, it's happened. It happened. Your country's been taken over, and you're being dictated to, and you're having all these things.
What is the black membership of the NRA like, Paul?
Oh yeah, well yeah. Did you see that?
Because is it to overthrow the government, or is it to keep people in the fucking place?
Well, yeah, exactly. There's that great sketch, and I don't know whether it's a Funny or Die one, but it's about like the right to bear arms, and then it's like a black guy appears with the guns, yeah, with the guns, and they're going, and this is two white guys going, oh, right, yeah, I can't even remember who it is. If anyone knows what I'm referring to, please do link it below. But yeah, we couldn't possibly contain a chat about America in all this. But Barmy, fascinating, Barmy, insane, dangerous, weird. And I just look at Barack Obama, and the problem with all of these things, Chris, is there's a counterpoint to all of this. Like, there's always, well, what, and you know, it's Donald Trump's greatest fucking weapon is the whataboutism that he's created, so that no one can make a point, because nobody is on a perfect enough standing to be able to have that point. Because if you make a valid point, but what if you were a fucking, what if you cheated on your wife? Well, no one's allowed to listen to you because you shagged around, and you're not allowed to make this point because you accidentally fucking ran a red light and you've got some points on your license. So there's no perfect people, so that everyone's point gets undermined. But I look at Barack Obama.
It doesn't quite, because the things that you've just said there, some probably did, and the difference is money.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. But that's what
I mean. Where's the wealth? We know where the wealth is.
Well, there's no, what I mean is you can't come at those people because it's set up to support them, isn't it? You know, again, the media just looks to fucking, we'll just go and run dirt all over you until your opinion. People are too busy talking about your faults to listen to your message. And as soon as people are talking about your faults, you've lost the ability. As soon as you've been pigeonholed and there's a name around you, there's a tagline on you, you're just that tagline. You're not, your voice loses its power. But I look at Barack Obama and I see him and I see his family walking in solidarity, and I see the way he talks and the way he conducts himself. And I remember being so ashamed that we had a conservative government in when Barack Obama was in power. I desperately wanted to have a good, strong, you know, Labour or left-leaning leadership in this country at the same time as Barack Obama. We had fucking David Cameron, and I just felt horrendously, cripplingly embarrassed. And you know, and I guarantee all you got to do is mention Barack Obama's name, and there'll be people coming out, there'll be immediate responses of like, but what about the way that none of that stuff matters, but
it's legacy as well, isn't it? I mean, you know, I don't know enough about his policies to really talk to in depth on it, Paul, but what I do know is the fact that Trump, when he first got into office, kept on using Obamacare as a stick to beat him with.
Yeah.
Now, the difficulty is, and I think one of the major issues that we have in politics, certainly in America, is to effect change needs more than a maximum of 8 years.
Yeah.
To effect change as a government, I think you probably need a minimum of 10.
Mm.
Unless you're the Tories, because you can ruin things very quickly.
Yeah.
And that's what they've done. But if you want to bring it back from 10 years of Tory leadership, you're going to need 15 to get it to where you need.
Yeah.
Now, Obama had his 8 years, maybe the best leader they've had in half a century.
Yeah.
Gone? Why?
Because
he was the best leader you've had in 50 years.
Because they are scared of the government running roughshod over them. That's why they've got the guns and they've got the rules to stop dictatorships happening. Don't be shocked. Don't be shocked when Trump goes full Palpatine at some point in the future and declares a special measure that allows him to stay in power for longer than his terms allow. But again, we'll get into that when we get there. The thing for me about Obama lastly is just, you know, when you just get a sense of someone who conducts themselves with a little bit of, there's intelligence behind his words, there's compassion behind his words, and I don't know, it's hard to say because if people are so conditioned to see people's faults, like maybe they've looked at the negative things that are on his campaign. I don't know. I compared him, and it's just, you wouldn't even imagine these guys were playing the same sport. You know, Obama and Trump, in terms of the dignity with which those two men, you know, the vastly contrasting dignities with which they conduct themselves is mad. But anyway,
it sounds ridiculous, Paul. Before you move on, it's like Hodgson to Klopp. It's like I couldn't watch Hodgson talk after the Liverpool game and I hang on every word of Klopp, and obviously we know which is which here. But I remember that first time I went to America with you and being stood, I've forgotten the name of it, where you go through in the airport and you stood.
Yeah,
waiting.
Immigration.
And Obama was on all the televisions.
Yeah.
And I've never been to a country where that's happened before. Yeah. And it was just a simple video message, but him talking about his country, and you could tell the love they had. And I kind of just stopped in my tracks, and also a little bit worried about you, because I don't think you'd got through at this point. I can't quite remember. And I just been like, this is fucking great.
Yeah, they have to update them every time they change president. They have to change all. They record the new video. They get all the things that, like, obviously Trump's all over it now. But yeah, mad. Right, we're going to move on. I want to talk about briefly about the return of the footy, because it's gathering pace significantly. But I meant to do this at the top, but forgot, because we just dove straight into it. We've had two new reviews, so thanks very much to the two people who reviewed the podcast. We've got a 5-star review here, titled Belter. I start work at 8 a.m. and I'm on my own for the first 2 hours of every shift. So this is a great way to fill the gap of boredom. Love the content, lads. Keep it up. That's from Lewis M99 by Apple Podcast. Thank you so much, Lewis. And Joe Hughes 369 is titled 5-star. Titled it Tour on Steroids. Love it. Just love it. Thanks so much, Joe. If you want to leave a 5-star review, you can do. And again, if you want to write anything, I will read it. We get them sent through to us. So yeah, that would be absolutely magnificent. Hey everyone, just mate again, a word from our sponsors, who are once again the wonderful, the incredible, the magnificent Threads for Reds. Go to threadsforreds.com. You can pick up some of the best Liverpool gear on the face of planet Earth right now. Not only is it well produced, not only is it well designed, but it's also incredibly high quality and comfortable as well. And now they do mugs. So if you want a Campeones del Mundo Liverpool mug to celebrate the fact that once upon a time, about 10 years ago it feels like now, Liverpool became world champions, you can do with a set of exclusive mugs. There's also a load to celebrate by the Trabs design Liverpool's successes in the European Cup as well. So get involved at threadsforreds.com. Yeah, Chris, so we touched upon Liverpool returning to training. Obviously, it was the time when they did the taking the photo, which, by the way, I didn't mention it, but Gini Wijnaldum and Virgil van Dijk led that. Amazing. We talked a couple of weeks ago. We've been talking about the Bundesliga coming back and footy coming back, and you were a bit nonplussed by the Bundesliga's return. My hope and both our hopes are that having some vested interest in a football team will make our interest levels up and counteract the fact that I'm maybe a bit worried that it might be crap when the Premier League returns. Chris, Liverpool put a 2-minute video out of them training 11 on 11 and I got very hard. I was more excited by a video where Naby Keita played a pass to himself and Curtis Jones had a shot saved than I was watching. I've watched, I think, 3 or 4 full Bundesliga games since its return. I got more out of that 2-minute video than any of that put together.
He played a manual pass through ball to himself. It was fucking fantastic. It was unbelievable. And Curtis Jones needs to work on his finishing a bit.
Was it Adrian in goal for that? Because if it is, that's one of the best saves I've ever seen.
Oh, come on, everyone's been a bit harsh on Adrian during the lockdown. It's just, yes, we know his last game wasn't great, but look, don't forget his first 10 of the season.
I mean
it was unbelievable, mate. I'm watching highlight videos now of training. Someone put one together and it's on Twitter, and it's right, we're getting everyone's ready to return to college. Even the highlights boys are back in it, ready to go. They've been dying for something, because it's bad for us, we've got nothing to talk about. What are they going to do? They've already made all the highlights for every game of football that's ever existed. But I think, you know, the other thing as well, watching that Dortmund Bayern Munich game, top level football.
Yeah.
And that was some fucking technical, that was a lovely technical game of football to watch as well, with ebb and flow that I think maybe has lacked within the games that I've seen.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder whether crowd has an effect on the momentum and the ebb and the flow of the game. But the Dortmund Bayern one had that without crowd, and that was the first time I've seen that, which is quite interesting.
Yeah, I think I don't know where I spoke about this. It must have been on a Red Men podcast. That I think what it's done, what the no crowd thing's done, is kind of made you realise that most games, if you get 2 or 3 goals up in a game, it's done, it's dead. But a crowd makes you think that anything's possible. Because fans are just get lost.
Baying in it, don't for be, blood on
yeah,
the outside.
Exactly. So I think taking fans away and look, it will have impacted the chances. But let's be honest, the vast majority of games, and this happened in a lot of Bundesliga games. The good teams are winning and they're winning convincingly, and it's the dead rubbers. By the last 15 minutes of the game, all the fights got out of the team that they're playing against. Union Berlin are a good example of this, who are seen as the plucky underdogs with a great little spirited fan base and a little ground and all that kind of stuff. But really, again, it's just a big fucking lie. Now, there are obviously examples that have it. We're fans of a football team that has a good track record of performing mad footballing miracles, but it doesn't really, you know, again, if you're a gambling man, you would lose far more money than you made over the course of a season if you bet against, if you bet on turnarounds happening. But it's funny that you're right. Good qualities. We'll probably see. The football's not going to be great in the Premier League, but we've got having a team that you give a shit about. It won't, Chris. It'll be crap.
We're talking about friendlies now. They've said it's okay for us to have friendlies. Came out today in the Telegraph, I think it was.
Okay. When?
Before the season starts.
Okay.
So now, I don't know how this works, and this is, I'm sure it was the Telegraph. Players are going to have to drive there in their own cars, and the talk is that it'll be refereed by a coach, rather than getting extra people in to properly referee it and stuff like that, but you never know, that will help. But the other thing is as well, and one thing that needs mentioning, we're going to be the loudest football team in the league. We were louder than any of those Bundesliga games I've seen. I've seen probably 4 now, not all of them in their entirety.
Yeah.
And fuck me, our team is vocal as a motherfucker, isn't it? And they are not... That's training, man. Yeah. That's first day back training, because that's the first contact they're allowed to have and stuff, and they were giving it the beads, and you're like, oh my days, we are going to be so good at football still. It's going to be amazing.
It is that thing, and because I get enjoyment out of pre-season games. I don't get the enjoyment out of them that I get from Champions League semi-finals or finals or crunch clashes against big rivals, but I enjoy watching. I enjoy the same reason I go to the game 45 minutes before it kicks off, because I enjoy watching the players doing the warm-ups. I enjoy seeing these players. I'm invested in them, and every touch is more information on those players that I'm putting into my own databanks on it. So, like, just for Liverpool coming back, I genuinely don't care about the quality of the opponents. I don't care if other teams are struggling with fitness, you know, and all that kind of stuff, and all the variety of issues that doubtless will be thrown up. But I can't wait. That's just whetted my appetite for it. Just Naby Keita, Curtis Jones, Larucci playing in there. Larucci, I haven't seen him since last summer. Great, you know. Let's see if he gets a touch. If he gets a game, what can he do? So I'm looking forward to whatever it looks like. More of it. More video clips. More bits and pieces. Yeah, I'm properly. But we're on a 2-week countdown now, aren't we? Till it all coming back.
Exciting.
We're gonna do our
we're gonna win the league.
I think so. I think if I'm gonna predict something, it's gonna be that. But we did our nailed on Premier League predictions at the start of the season.
Smashed
on the podcast
it as well, didn't we?
Yeah, I'd recommend going back and checking that out and seeing how we got on with that. But we will
just
revisit.
Believe me, we smashed it. There's no need to go back and see what we predicted.
We are going
really, really well. It's
we're
fine.
Going to revisit that this week. This week coming, sorry. Yeah, on next week's show, we're going to revisit our predictions and we're going to make some more predictions and more nailed on predictions for the rest of the season. So
I'm
if
not
you
sure
want
to, I need to change anything.
No, maybe not. But leave us yours in the comments underneath on YouTube, or you can tweet us at MHXPayJack with your nailed on season restart predictions. And it can be anything from results and matches to things that players do, or some of the weirder and wilder stuff. So I'm thinking, like, which player from each Premier League club is most likely to break lockdown and miss a game of football because of their own stupidity? And obviously everyone's going to say probably Jesse Lingard, or you know, if it's Liverpool, probably Dejan Lovren, but yeah, things like that. So any topic suggestions for that, like what you would like us, headlines, headings for what we can be predicting, leave them in the comments underneath. And if you want to put your own answer in there, do that as well. Just a quick little update. I just thought, because I know she listens to the podcast, on Scrabble, Chris, I'm currently 6-1 up.
Shit.
Just saying, mate, I have ascended. I've gone to the next level. And in fact, we even had another game where Jack played as well, played his first game of proper Scrabble at 8 years old. And he came last, he came third, but I won that one as well. So I'm technically 7-1 up, but I'm keeping it fair. I'm keeping it orthodox. I'm going with the 6-1 thus far. So she's got some catching up to do. She's a teacher. She's going back to school on Monday, mate. She's got to teach people. I'm just saying, I might actually be better at this job and better at her job at this point. Just
what I don't understand is, how can she go into school with her head held high? There's absolutely no way she can go in and not think she's a complete and utter fraud.
Well, she might have to go back in and just be surrounded by idiots again, because kids are idiots, aren't they? Being surrounded by a bunch of people she's defo cleverer than might give her a bit of a lift.
Make a change from being at home.
Love you, honey pie. Love you. Yeah. yeah, great. Right, okay. That's it from me, Chris. Thanks. Oh, by the way, I've obviously mentioned it earlier on in the
That's
podcast.
That's fucking paid, lad.
I just want to say massive thank you to all of our patrons. We got a little gang of them together for the first ever Q&A hangout.
I think it was a gaggle.
A gaggle, yeah, absolutely. A small collection.
There's one for Charlie.
It was brilliant. We finally got him. We got it where we got through a few technological humps. It was great just to put, you know, faces to names. We had a good old chat once we got everyone in and worked out what we were doing. It was good. We're going to be doing another one in a few weeks' time. So if you want to get involved with all that, and I'm sure people who are patrons are in the comments, will extol the virtues of it underneath. Come and join in.
You will, won't you?
You will.
Good.
You
thank
will.
You.
Patreon.com/ MHXPayJack for that. Have you got something specifically you want to page?
The my bottom. So really. My bottom, yes.
My bottom.
I've been riding my bike again.
Ah, right. So you've got rider's ass.
Oh my God, something chronic. Like, so I went out. I think it was. I've probably whinged about it every week. But my back's been really bad since like October on and off.
Right, has it?
Yeah, mate. Honestly, it's like I'm just so zen. I never let it show.
Yeah.
I never let it bother me. I'm not an open book, I'm a closed book. And so I felt comfortable enough to go on a bike ride on Sunday. So I went down to Ducky Pond, obviously, as you do.
Ducky Pond.
Yeah, man, Ducky Pond in Halewood, innit? Which takes me longer than it should. And it's a nice little ducky pond, you know what I mean? And stuff.
Sorry, is it? Sorry. Is it a pond with ducks in?
Yeah.
And you're calling it, or is it, and therefore you're calling it Ducky Pond, or is its name actually Ducky Pond?
I think its name might be Ducky Pond. I'm going to check. Hang on a second.
Because, okay.
It might just be called Duck Pond, to be honest, and I've, Ducky Pond, Halewood. Ducky Pond, Halewood.
Okay, cool.
Ducky Pond, there you go.
Sweet, okay, cool.
Fucking nailed it. So obviously I went down to Ducky Pond, innit, lad? You know what I mean? With all the lids doing the laughing gas and that. It's lovely, especially late at night, which is when I went at like 9:30. And I get there to have a little sit at the pond and there's the lids all there with the fishing rods and all that, like a fucking boss. I was like, okay, great. I'll go straight home. Anyway, so I ride home. It takes about 45 minutes to an hour, something like that. And I'd not been on my bike for a long time, so it took closer to an hour. I'm feeling it. I feel good. I'm sweating. This is the best workout I've had in ages. Get on my bike last night. Can't sit down. And it's like, what is that about? Yeah. Like, why the fucking hell? I mean, it hurts like a motherfucker, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's like, why? Why is this? I mean, I sit on seats all day, every day. It can't just be a weight distribution issue with me sitting on a seat. Yeah. But it is, because obviously it's much more focused and stuff like that. I've got a big seat because I've got a big arse. And so I'm there and I get on my bike and I'm like, okay, sound. I'll go down to the Raller again. But this time I'll turn left on the Raller. I'll head down towards Sainsbury's and West Derby and all that. Really downhill to the rally, and I get there and I must be cycling with pedals, because I've not really used my pedals, 15 meters
yeah.
before I decide that I'm close to turning back here. Like, I was blowing first off and my arse was in bit, so I managed to make it down to the Sainsbury's. So if you saw an overweight guy in all black sweating riding up the pavement at about 1 mile an hour, stood up last night along Queen's Drive, that would be me. And it took me so long. I'm like, my legs were fucked and my arse is in absolute tatters today, mate.
So absolute can tatters. I make a suggestion? Rather than purging your arse, because I've said this before, you're going to end up a brain in a jar by the end of this, by the time we finish doing this podcast.
Oh, well, that works out well for some people. Think of the turtles.
Yeah, can we just purge? Do you want to just purge that just the fact that the notion that bicycle seats cause pain to the arse for no reason whatsoever, why don't we just purge that? Because that'll save you. You can save you. That's a big purge, that, isn't it?
Fucking is a big purge in my bottom.
I'm happy for you to purge that, because you're right, it's stupid. That's one of the things I got on my bike for the first time in years, like the other day, just to check it was okay, and it seems to be okay at the moment.
So you owe me an apology.
No, Charlie fixed it. It seems okay. I need to do a proper test of it in the coming days, and I will. But also, you're right. It's like being told that you're going to get punched in the face. Knowing makes it worse. And that's the thing about bike riding a bike. You know it's going to hurt. And the thing is, once you've ridden once, you get the bug, so you want to ride again. And it takes, you know, it just takes a few goes to get back.
But this is something that I have given it, like, it's like every year I go through this teething, you know what I mean? It's like, come on, arse.
An arse callus building.
Can you just get on with it? Like,
yeah.
Can you just do something that makes it better? Like, let's be honest, at my level, do I really need an aerodynamic seat? Can I not just have a good seat like my kids got on the back?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm like, I'm not fucking like that, leaning forwards like fucking Lance Armstrong going fucking drugs. I'm having a leisurely little ride sat up. I wouldn't mind cushions,
yeah,
to be honest, in this instance. And you know I hate cushions. I'd like some shoulder rests, maybe. I might take Cat bike out, actually. Maybe that's the issue. And just put a fucking seat on it, a proper seat.
Put like your lunch in your basket on the front. Something.
Mate, magic.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or somewhere to throw the fish when I've been to Ducky Pond.
I've seen some of the lids around ours have got those, if you know, the electric bikes now.
They
look amazing. And you can get like an electric conversion kit off Amazon for a couple hundred quid. And I'm looking at it because Jack's got like a little electric
scooter, and it's so cool. It's just a bit too small for me to ride on, which is devastating. But like, I just think about it, like, I might, they look absolutely amazing. I might have to invest, or get yourself like a chopper, like, because I think that's got what more you're looking like. It's got like a more of a proper seat, bit of a lie back low rider style situation, and maybe that doesn't hurt anywhere near as much. But no, I'm happy to purge that.
Can I just purge one more thing really quickly, because I think it's important that links in with the rest of the show.
Go on.
I was watching a video on the American protests and everything, and George Floyd and all that type of stuff, and I got a 30-second non-skippable advert on CNN's fucking website.
Yeah.
Right. From fucking Dubai or something. Like, really? You know, like, I get that, like, you have to have adverts and, like, look, you have to try and make money and stuff like that, but there's got to... It's like Matt Hancock doing a big piece to the fucking British public behind a paywall.
Yeah.
In it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Something so big and actual fucking news that people should have a right to see. Can we not just, someone just think, let's just turn the ads off on this one?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. But then, yeah, I mean, this is
fucking news. It wasn't opinion, like.
Yeah, well, that's the problem with media in general, isn't it? Is that who's paying for it? We had this with the paywall stuff when the government was leaking coronavirus advice to the paywall of the Telegraph the weekend before they told everyone else. Yeah, it's a joke. I think I might have purged this before, but it came back to me. I was eating a small packet of blueberries, and I want to purge that 1 in 10 blueberry.
You've done it.
I need to purge. Well, clearly it's not worked, Chris, because that 1 in 10 blueberry that tastes like fucking compost, what is that all about? Is there any need for that? There isn't. Ruins the whole experience. Like mussels are like that as well. Like 1 in 10 mussels that you eat taste like arse. And it's like having a fucking, just the most pathetic Russian roulette game ever. You just got a taste of filth in your mouth. Anyway, that'll do for me.
I think that's like the blocker in the NFL, isn't it? You know what I mean? He's just there filling himself up with the soil so that the rest, he sacrificed himself so that the rest can be sweet.
Yeah.
And you can enjoy it. You know what I mean? Shit. You should be thanking that fucking blueberry, not purging the arse off it.
Nah, it's gone. It's gone. Because in my ideal world, I get to keep all the ones as they are, the other ones as they are, and the other one, just purge the bad blueberries. If we could purge all the bad blueberries from life, Chris, maybe it's a metaphor.
Metaphorically speaking,
yeah,
of course.
Yeah. Right, okay. We'll
start with the orange one.
Yeah, okay. Chris, once.
Upon.
Ah.
Time.
Walked.
Ah.
Hippo.
That.
Loved.
Cock.
So much.
That.
It.
Fingered.
Ah.
Eel.
Senselessly.
Until.
It.
Grew.
So.
Big.
That.
It.
Exploded.
All.
Over
the
hippo's
hair.
Afterwards,
it
wiped
its
head
on
a
giant
towel
before
gradually
withering.
Withering?
Withering.
It's.
Oh, now that's made that difficult. Balls.
Inside.
A.
Shed.
Because.
It.
Was.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Bored.
And
horny.
Why? No, wait. Why? There we go.
Because
it's
life
was
complete.
The
end.
Motherfucker.
Brilliant. Please forgive us for all our sins. We try. It's a tough life being us when you've got deep and heavy thoughts and deep and heavy situations, but you're also fucking idiots. So yeah, listen. If you enjoy what we're doing, please do support us on Patreon. It does help. Patreon.com/MateXPage. I can get involved, whether it's on our Discord group, in the post itself on Patreon, and of course in our monthly live Q&A hangout. Yes, we'll leave you there. Thanks very much to our sponsor, Threads for Reds, this week. Do go and check them out, of course, and make sure you subscribe to the YouTube channel. Leave a 5-star review on all your native podcasting apps. And if you want more from me and Chris in the meantime, of course, we're on the redmentv.com. I'm on twitch.tv/matesgaming and matestv on YouTube. And Chris has got Chris Pajak YouTube channel, and he's got a Twitch channel as well, now doing Football Manager. That's Mr. Blood Red, MR Blood Red, one word. Check us out there. We love you guys, and we'll see you all soon.
Witness history at Roland Garros, where old rivalries meet new talent on the clay battleground. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV live in HD. Experience 3 weeks of unparalleled access as the world's top players in tennis face off to see if the veterans maintain their dominance or if a fresh face rises to challenge them. Daily live coverage of the French Open begins Monday, May 20th. Stream it now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it happens.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.